Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad. Be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow, as we begin to merge onto the highway here, picking up a little speed. Looking forward to tonight's show. We have a member of Chuck's team that's going to be joining us tonight. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, we always welcome your interaction. You can press the number one. That gets you in the call screen as queue to let us know that you would like to get up and on board with us. We always welcome your interaction, whether you have a question or if you just want to make a comment. You can also always feel free to do so. So press the number one. That lets us know that you are there and that you want to get up and on board. And we'll try to weave you into the conversation as quickly as we possibly can. With that being said, and without any further ado, this week's DAT trend lines, I think that we are starting, we're getting ready to start to see somewhat of a trend. I'm not sure. I haven't done enough investigating to speak intelligently about it as of yet, but we're going to start to see diesel fuel starting to creep up, and it's already starting. From this time last week, we are up by 2%. The national average price of diesel fuel is up to $3.48 per gallon. So jumping into the report from DAT this week, high spot rates hold steady for another week. Dry vans and reefer spot rates nudged up a penny per mile while flatbed rates remained flat. Spot rates are staying at record levels and continue to go against seasonal trends as we start fall. Supply chain disruptions, port congestions, semiconductor chip shortages for new trucks and not enough drivers moving loads during the unprecedented peak shipping season are keeping rates in high demand. Some lanes are breaking weekly records, such as the Los Angeles to Las Vegas lanes, where reefer spot rates broke $6 per mile last week. So let's take a look, take a deeper dive, jumping into each segment type, starting off with the dry van portion of the report. Looking up, taking a peek in that upper northeastern corridor, we have an average outbound spot market rate checking in at $2.53 per mile for dry vans. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we have a $2.74 per mile average on the outbound spot market rate. Moving back up into the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $3.07. Coming out of the South Central region, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.57. And coming out of the West Coast, wrapping it up, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate for dry vans at $2.98. Shifting gears, jumping over into that flatbed market, we're showing out of the Northeast an average spot rate of $2.90. Moving down to the Mid-Atlantic, we're showing an average outbound rate of $3.23 for flatbeds. Coming back up to the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound rate of $3.29. Dropping down to the South Central region, we're showing an average rate of $3.02. And coming back to the West Coast, we're showing an average outbound rate of 277. Jumping into that temperature control with our reefer portion of the report, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate coming out of the Northeast at 294. The Mid-Atlantic and Southeastern states are showing an average outbound rate of 282. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound rate for reefers at 359. Moving down to the South Central region, we're showing an average outbound rate of 294. Wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we're showing an average outbound rate at 342. With that being said, let me go and grab my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Good evening, Chuck. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. How are you, Rico?
I really can't complain, Chuck. Can't complain at all. Thank God that we are still walking around and kicking, living and breathing. It's all a good thing. Hopefully everything is going well up to, on your end, up above, up in the up in the northern part of the hemisphere, or on our side of things, of North America.
Well, you know what? It's listen, there's a shortage of trucks and drivers. all over the place. It's the same thing. Maybe not quite as severe up here as it is down there, but it's still pretty bad. It's just the way it is. And today I celebrated 47 years in the trucking industry, and it's been it's just been an incredible experience. I could not have been luckier to pick the better industry to work in and to earn my living. It's just been fantastic. 47 years ago, my God, rates like this you only dreamt about. However, the licensed carriers at the time were getting rates like this back 47 years ago, believe it or not, back before deregulation. I'm really excited about today's show because, and I kind of pegged it for this, I knew that today being the 5th of October was going to be my 47th anniversary, and I wanted to bring in some of the people from Traffix, and I couldn't think of anybody that's got better insight in the U.S. market than Jeremy and Scott. So with no further ado, Scott Sears and Jeremy Schlackett, welcome to the show. Thank you both for joining tonight.
I'm going to run and grab Scott. Jeremy is up and on board right now. I'm going to go grab Scott, I believe.
Okay.
Well, first of all, Jeremy, Chuck, thanks for having us. Yeah, I'm here. Thank you. First of all, Chuck and Rico, thanks for having us. And as they say in the old town, mazel tov, Mr. Snow. It's been an incredible accomplishment over the time. You've seen things that only young people in the industry can only dream about.
You're right. It was a different era back then, but things have changed, and in some ways for the better, in some ways for the worse. I was trying to explain to
Jeremy,
one of the young guys in dispatch today, he just couldn't get his head around how some things work because he's new to the industry, he's fairly new, and he just couldn't understand why appointments are made the way they are. And finally I said, don't you understand that when it comes to these large warehouses and places where we're delivering these receivers, they're not made by people. This is all made autonomously, basically. And then finally got through his head. And he said, well, people would never do anything like this. I go, well, that's why they don't have people. There's nobody to answer to. So the world has changed so much. Years ago, they were happy to just get the shipment. Now they wanted it 9:04 p.m. In door 27, not door 26. But, that's the world you gentlemen live in every day, too. Speaking of, thank you both again for joining us tonight. This market that we're in, what's your prediction? How long do you think this is going to keep up?
Well, I guess I'll kick it off because my partner's not as talkative as I am. But, I think for an economist or anybody that is a smarter, more educated person than I am in this industry, I don't think anyone could really pinpoint exactly when and how this market's going to shift. But I will say we're already beyond peak season when it comes to importing. If you haven't imported yet, you're not getting your stuff until next year. And being that there's 57, 58 container ships that all have hundreds of thousands of containers on them that are standing on the port of California and New Jersey and Oregon and West Washington and Charleston, I don't think there's any signs of this slowing down. In fact, people that are now planning for Easter are starting to place orders right now so they can beat their ship dates. I mean, what's funny to me is I spoke to a customer of mine yesterday, and I said, I've been out of the international game for so long, I came from a company that did some international shipping, so I stayed up to terms with what rates were going for. And from Shanghai to Chicago, 5 years ago, the rate was, I think it was like $3,500 to $4,500.
Right.
And they're paying $23,000 a container right
now.
Whoa! $23,000 a container. So I said to him, how does that affect the cost of goods? Because obviously when you're shipping widgets or toys or whatever, Dollar General came out this week stating that they're having to change their model that they can't sustain, you know, in the dollar anymore. So they're going to be raising their rates. And, you know, companies like Five Below who have sold product for $5 or less, and their number one SKU was a plastic pool noodle. Well, when you're shipping containers in from Asia, that's coming in, and your costs have gone up by $15,000 a container, you break that up by per noodle, you know, obviously the consumers are going to see it. So there was an article in Wall Street Journal this past week that said this is the worst inflation since 1970. And I think that all has a lot to do with what we're seeing from a supply and demand. And, you know, there was one last thing before I pass it off to Scott. You know, someone said, a former president of the CFPB said that all this technology is great, but at the end of the day, this is an interpersonal industry, and no matter how good of infrastructures and technology people have, in this day and age, it's do you have a truck, yes or no? I don't care what your computer is saying, what the rate is. So to answer your question, Chuck, I don't have the answer. I don't have a crystal ball, but I don't see it getting any better until at least 2023. Mr. Sears, what's your opinion on this topic?
You know, Jerry, I don't know if you've ever been told this, but you can host a radio show, join Chuck and Rico. But to your guys' point, I my crystal ball is foggy as well. And I think that everything that we've been reading and when we see volume chip, all of a sudden we start to think that the market's slowing down. The market's not slowing down. There are days when there's less volume, you know, Tuesday, Thursday. But at the same point, I don't expect this to slow down at all. And when you're talking about supply and demand of truckers and drivers, nobody's really talking about the labor hours and people not wanting to go into facilities. Drivers are becoming more and more picky. They don't want to drop a trailer because for retail customers, a trailer is much more valuable when it's on the road rather than dropping, regardless of how the business operates. And people are saying, I don't want to go to this facility because they might not have the manpower to unload me in 2 hours, or it may take 5 hours. You know, we had a customer up in Pennsylvania that they literally, the workforce just staged a walkout. They had 7 people in the entire facility walk out. It was a large shipper. And there's, when you're talking about the compensation for everything like now, and everybody's saying go back to work, and the government took back that $300 a week, that's a lot of money that now people were double-dipping on, and now they're actually having to go back. So they're trying to make up for that. And they were double-dipping for so long, and they're making, you know, I think, Rico, I think you said it was $6 a mile out of one market. The fact that people are being paid $6 a mile, you know, cross-country right now is insane. And now that we're getting an extra $1,200 a month, that money's going away. Maybe that's coming up to $7 an hour, you know, a mile. But I don't see this happening or getting any better for a long, long time. Because, unfortunately,
I totally agree.
While trucking is
the
more
profession. The biggest driver, I think, that's going to keep this thing where it is the lack of truck drivers. And we're not, you know, we're just not coming up with that many more people that want to drive truck, especially ones that are willing to drive truck and stay out for any period of time, because people are people, and people now want lifestyle, and I think that the lure of the open road that I was enticed by, that's gone years ago. You know, now the open road is drive for 11 hours and find a place to park that's not full of pee bottles. You know, that's the, you know, there's no lure in that. There's, you know.
Chuck, there was this company that used to, in my previous company, they used to run up and down the 5 for me, from L.A. up to Seattle. Right. They ran the business dedicated for about 10 years. Great company called Jim Pruitt Trucking, and old veteran-based company. And these guys only hired ex-veterans. And now they can't, veterans don't want to get in the trucks. And now some companies are starting to recruit people who are rehabilitating themselves and getting out of jail and whatnot. And so they don't even, you know, some of those people don't even want to get in the truck. And I don't see there's no motivation. It's not the lifestyle that you guys have lived. I can't imagine that for myself. I'm not wired like that, but I can't imagine a lot of people wanting to do that at this day and age.
Not anymore, because you're so and I understand what we've had really is we've had not just deregulation, but we've really had re-regulation, and drivers are more strictly regulated now than ever before. And, you know, it's just not a fun place. And I think that the book has to be rewritten if we're going to attract people into this industry. It's just not what we have now is working for rules, is working against everything. You know, the fact that people have to pay $6 a mile to move a shipment is, you know, that's proof how tough things are, you know, to move things up and down the road. And America doesn't, and Canada too. We don't have the infrastructure to move it any other way. And especially, you know, if you look at our history, we've gotten into in the last 30 years or so, industry has started to work on just in time. And nobody keeps inventory. You know, years ago, when I got into this game, companies had huge inventory, so they could play the game a little better. Today, with everything being so lean, I think that it's more difficult. They can't do it, and they've got the retailer has to work right in lockstep with the manufacturer. And since there's no truckers available to buy the amount of product that is being consumed, we have a real void in our marketplace. And this isn't good for anybody. You know, I don't think anybody wants to see crazy inflation like what we had in the 70s.
I think it's on the way.
Well, I let me ask you a question. I don't know the answer to this, but can someone with a previous record, they can't even get a CDL, I thought.
Sure they can.
They can get a CDL. That's not a problem. Getting a CDL is not a problem. A lot of times it's been companies have kind of weeded them out during the vetting process. But yeah, someone with a criminal record can definitely get a CDL.
They wouldn't be able to do cross border. They wouldn't be able to go in and out of the ports. They probably wouldn't be able to handle bonded loads, things like that. But there's certainly opportunities for them. And there's some companies, there's some large U.S. carriers that tried that when our industry deregulated back in the early 80s. And they were hiring people that had, you know, had been in jail. And it didn't work out. Because they're, you know, a lot of times, I'll be honest, and I'm not saying that this is always the case, but in a lot of cases, our prisons in both sides of the border don't do a great job in rehabilitating. So you take somebody that is broken the law, they robbed the bank or whatever, and they go into jail, and nobody has taught them life skills, and then 5 or 8 or 10 or 12 years later, you let them out, you give them a CDL, and these people don't know what to do with it. You know, they're not interested in, you know, running. What's the difference between running from California to New York in a little truck, you know, in the confines of a cab, back and forth, Interstate 80, and that of a prison cell? Except the scenery does change in the truck. You're being told when to wake up, when to go to bed, when to stop, when to work. You know, you get paid. But that's why I don't think we're attracting those, you know, the former inmates. And I don't know where we're going to get these people from to take these jobs, because we really do need them. You know, Canada has just recently brought in 40,000 refugees from Afghanistan, and you know, out of that 40,000, we may get a couple thousand truck drivers. The problem is, it takes a while until you can hire them because they need experience. and at least some of the big U.S. carriers and even some of the a handful of the larger Canadian carriers are in a position to do the training and do the mentoring, which is something that small carriers of even 100 trucks can't do. So that's not the answer, and we're not going to have trucks anytime soon that are totally autonomous. We're not going to be just sending trucks pulling trailers with no drivers up and down the interstate. That's not going to happen. And I don't think, you know, it's too bad that so many rail lines were pulled out in the 80s, because, you know, rail is certainly an answer when it's available. But I have customers, I don't know what you guys are, if you're seeing it too, but I have customers that ship from the West Coast to Toronto that have historically always used the rail, and they're calling looking for truck capacity because they can't get any rail capacity. Are you finding the same thing?
Chuck, one of my retailers out in Pennsylvania, they normally switch over around August from all their intermodal, because it's probably 70-30 in terms of OTR versus intermodal, and it's all out of the Long Beach area going into Pennsylvania, and they shut off intermodal this year. The delays were too long. It wasn't worth the time. It was so critical for them, especially in the market that we're dealing with COVID and everything, to ensure that the product was on the shelves to their customers. And they were paying through the nose. And then today I was on another call with one of our sales reps in Toronto, and the customer was telling me that they're also a retailer, that they had been paying, rather than shipping OTR or intermodal from L.A. to Ohio, they were paying for air freight. And that was a huge, huge mark on their spend, because they need to get the freight to their facility in the U.S. And they didn't know what else to do with it, and that was the only way to do it. And some of our furniture
now,
customers
these were
are doing
partial
the same
loads, or were these full truckloads?
Full truckloads, yeah.
Oh, full truckloads. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, do you think they actually were being moved via air, or were they being moved by teams?
No, by air.
Wow.
They were put on the plane, yeah. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, that is. So let me ask you, gentlemen, do you think we're going to go back to, walk backwards, and customers are going to start carrying inventory? Because money's cheap right now. I don't know about warehousing, because it's gotten pricey up here anyways. But
I don't think people can keep up with inventory, though. I mean, even if your stance as an organization, whether you're in food and beverage or in manufacturing, is that we want to up our inventory levels, I challenge you to say how. Because, you know, you go to grocery stores, especially in the United States right now, there's empty shelves. And I'll tell you, from working in a grocery store for a year in high school, that was their number one biggest thing, that they never wanted an empty centimeter in their floor, because that's all they have. They're a brick and mortar. They want to be the shelves filled in.
Right.
Right now, you go into stores and there's aisles that are completely empty. Not because they, not by choice, because they literally cannot get the product fast enough. And I don't want to say it's all on trucking, but there's a huge strain on company supply chain from the raw materials coming in. I mean, I was at a bakery company last week. They ship about 50 truckloads a day of bread, and they're making cheesy bread for a large fast food company across the United States. They basically are saying that if they had 7 more machines, they would still be running them 24/7. They would have the capacity to ship 160 truckloads a day. They'd be able to do it. They were shutting down. They were letting some customers go so they could service their other customers, because there's that much of a demand right now. And, you know, from a supply side, you know, I do a lot of aluminum. They can't get caught up. They're trying their best, but I mean, they were flying in planes from Europe just to get inventory over to the States to service their customers. So, I mean, you know, you look at some revenues from publicly traded organizations, and the revenue side of things has gone astronomical. And, you know, we were talking about this a little bit before the call today. Revenue is going to go up, but not gross margin is not going to expand because brokerages are feeling the margin compression as much as anybody. Just because the market's good and our rates go up doesn't mean that we're pocketing the money. We're going out and paying carriers more and more. And, you know, the market today is not a third-party market. And if anything, this is a carrier market more than anybody. The shippers and third-party companies are really taking, you know, if you didn't expect this to be in 2021, then you haven't been living in this industry long enough because all signs were saying it was going to get this bad. I just don't think people factored in the backup of ships on the ports. And that plays a whole nother level because when any ship gets released, it's a fire alarm going off to that company to get teams and drivers in there as soon as possible to transload. And, you know, warehouses right now, Chuck, some warehouses on the West Coast don't even want to store product. They just want to be a cross dock.
Sure.
So you say, you know, I think a lot of procurement people would love to get ahead of this and have inventory, but I don't see a path how.
Wow. You know, we definitely we will have issues if we try to spend our way out of it in the fact that we're going to have incredible inflation. Now, I don't know if we'll have hyperinflation, but certainly we could end up over this. We could end up with inflation and a stagnant economy because things can only afford so much.
Well, but Chuck, what the United States government's doing, especially with this new infrastructure law that they're trying to push through, is they're trying to get money back from places, right? So what are they doing?
Right.
They're charging more for fuel, for taxes for fuel,
right.
more for tolls going over bridges. Well, if you take a step back, and I'm not going to get politically on if I'm a Republican or Democrat, but if you take a step back, what you're doing is you're again inflating the cost, and you may be incurring more from a infrastructure standpoint for taxes, but all that's going to do is increase the cost of transportation again. So all these laws that are supposed to be helping people are doing the exact reverse. All it's going to do is you want to go buy oranges, no problem. Now they're $7 a pound when they used to be $1.25 a pound. You want to go buy strawberries. They're not going to be at every single grocery store anymore. You want Scott's a big vegan. You want to go buy his vegan meat. It's not going to be able to go to those grocery stores anymore because the cost is going to be too much and some people won't be able to afford it.
Yeah.
So,
going
back to inventory and all of these changes that people are trying to make to reduce the cost and get, you know, give these false advertisements of this is going to help the economy, it's actually doing the exact opposite. Where is all this money coming from? All this money of course, and what does that do? It lowers the value of the dollar in our pocket right now.
Yeah. And we're doing the same thing up in Canada, even more so. There's no difference in what we're doing. We don't have gold backing our dollar anymore. We have a printing press. You know, that's why I'm guessing people are starting to use Bitcoin. They have more faith in some computer-generated currency. Pretty scary.
Don't get Scott started. Scott trades digital pictures now, so don't get him started on that whole conversation.
Hey, good for you, Scott.
Well,
Chuck,
look what all these other governments are doing.
That's like what ETFs and all that stuff, right?
NFTs.
Rico,
I got a real cool picture of a dog.
I got the initials backwards.
He's got a picture of a dog that my 7-year-old could draw, and it's going for $5,000. I'm like, what? I don't understand this at all.
No, it's going for over 11. But some guy,
$11,000 for a digital picture
so
that
stupid.
Looks like the computer had the computer screen broken, it cracked, and that's what it looks like.
But people are, I mean, if you look at all these other governments, I mean, El Salvador is using, they're making their own cryptocurrency. All these other, I mean, like, if you talk to a financial planner, every single financial planner says you should have a certain percentage of your net worth in cryptocurrency. It may go backwards, but the amount of people that are laundering money, and that's why there's all these restrictions through there. People are laundering money through there, but it is the new way. And you have all these other companies. If Tesla and some of these other companies will allow you to start paying with cryptocurrency, there's no way to track it. And that's just money just being moved around. It is a very – and it's also – like, I hate saying this, but it's pulling people away from the workforce because people are taking the time, similar to that $300 a week that people are getting for not working a certain number of hours, people are making more money trading currency, stocks, NFTs, whatever you want to call it, than they would be in a normal job.
And they're not being productive.
That's driving away people.
That's a great point, Scott. I never thought of that. But, yeah, people can sit home and trade currency and trade stocks. And, I don't know, maybe this week they're making money and next week they lose it. But at least they feel like they're, they're making some progress. And I guess at the end of the year they just do the calculation and see if it was worth their while.
I have a friend who hasn't worked in over 10 years because he got in early on Bitcoin and Ethereum, and all he does is to trade cryptocurrency now. Very smart guy, but he got lucky and hit it big. And that's pulling people away from the workforce, regardless of what industry it is.
Yeah. It's
sorry,
it's scary.
Sorry, you're on a tangent. Thanks, Jer.
Are you guys are you seeing the shortage of labor, even general labor, like servers in restaurants, grocery stores, throughout your area as well?
Yeah,
absolutely.
We had the wonderful opportunity of seeing Daniel last Monday, and one of the busiest restaurants in Chicago was half empty. And I asked the server, I go, we couldn't get reservations till kind of 9 o'clock, and they go, we have tables, we don't have servers and busboys, and there's. Even in our office, I mean, the demand of labor is so strong right now, and it's a problem for all companies because people are willing to pay and they're willing to go poach talent from other companies and inflate the costs. So all of a sudden, everyone's having to come to the table and look out for their employees, but at the same time, I mean, this puts a lot of companies at a lot of financial risk.
Sure. When things normalize, what do they do with those people that they overpay?
I mean, the best thing I heard, I was talking to a driver today, and he's like, I just waited an hour and a half to get a sandwich from Wendy's at a truck stop. And I was like, I drove to Cleveland a few weeks ago, and there were trucking stops that literally were closed just because they couldn't have people to man the food area, the fast food and the convenience stores. I mean, imagine if you're a driver on the road after a 10-hour shift trying to get something to eat and you can't find a place to go because there's no staff. I feel bad. I feel terrible.
And hence, that brings us back to that's why people don't want to drive trucks. Because after driving for 10 hours, do you really want to make a sandwich in the back of your truck? I know that there's lots of people that do, and there depends where you're going. If you're just doing a one-day trip, you pack a lunch or somebody makes you sandwiches or something. But if you're going coast to coast, it's not as easy, especially if you're going round trip. You're driving from New York or Toronto to the West Coast and then back back to the East Coast or Toronto, it's not, where to get the food from. You got to find a grocery store where you can park your truck and go in and buy fresh food. It's not easy. And, this sort of thing is why we're having these shortages, and we got to get in front of them somehow with everything.
But I think we were talking about the future of everything. And I just honestly believe that right now it's just everything is uncharted territory. And we talked a little bit about, everything is in turmoil as far as the availability of stuff. You can't get the price of used cars, new cars is gone through the roof. The cost of goods for all the stuff, and I'm just not sure how does this look once the correction takes. We talked about inflation. How is everything going to look once the correction starts to happen? And that's but right now, I don't know how to plan our way forward. I think right now everyone has to try to continue to do good business with your business partners, but you have to set yourself up to kind of get ready, because you know, to steal a line from the Game of Thrones, winter is coming.
You know, Rico, I spent a lot of time now, especially now, just looking at different digital freight boards and just seeing what's out there. And what amazes me is companies that I've never, ever, ever heard of that are popping up over and over again. Excuse me. So if I have one piece of advice, I'd say choose your partners wisely from a carrier side.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Because money gets funny. And, you know, you start taking a lot of freight from a customer, and it may be Christmas trees or, you know, some type of commoditized product, or that company has been in financial trouble for years. Now they're seeing an uptick, and they're like, well, we were going to shut our doors. Why shut our doors now? We can make some money back and, you know, declare bankruptcy then. I mean, just I challenge all the listeners to be very cognizant when choosing a partner of who you want to be partnered with. And I know that it probably goes without saying, but the amount of companies out there and you know, running a credit score and carrier 401 and all that doesn't mean anything anymore, because there's a lot of scammers out in the market, especially yep. when the market's this hot. And, you know, our company really thrives and strives off of our carrier partnerships along with carrier payment, because we understand it's a crucial part of the business.
We've got a very caller that's so. Got a question that wants to get involved. Let me go here
go
to
ahead.
Georgia. Steven is up and on board with us. Steve, go ahead. What's your question? How can we help?
Hey, I appreciate y'all taking my call. Very interesting topic. And Chuck asked the question that I was going to ask. With all the shortages that's taking place and you know, and us as American, I feel that regardless of what happened or what comes on the face of the earth, we may have to suffer a little while, but I think we got very intelligent people and very smart people that's put into place to figure out how to get us over the hump or get us through this, you know. And one of the things that I, you know, want to ask, again, you know, like I said, Chuck, you said you asked the question, but because of the shortages that's going on and because of the circumstance, customers are not being able to produce freight, push freight out. Do you think this could possibly be the end of the just-in-time service or the beginning of the end of the just-in-time services?
Personally, yeah, I do. Just like I think it could be the beginning of the end to offshoring so much manufacturing. Now, that's my personal opinion. I'd love to hear what Scott, Jeremy, and Rico have to say on that. But yeah, I think that companies may have learned that had they been in front of this from the start, and especially money being so cheap. Remember something, gentlemen, this is my perspective anyways. We really embraced JIT from the auto industry in the very early 80s when money was 18%. Money, to borrow money is a fraction of that now. So, really, there's it doesn't make a lot of sense. But, Scott, tell me your take on what do you think?
I mean, I personally think that there's always going to be JIT. I think that with depending on what business sector you're in, whether it's automotive, retail, packaging, that there's always going to be a need for it. I mean, we depending on what the customer is and what their need and how they buy, That's gonna create that need, and I think that there's a lot of shippers out there who think that they're sophisticated, they think that they're a shipper of choice, and while that's a buzzword, it goes back to labor, goes back to planning and making and being transparent. There's a lot of customers out there that act like they're the biggest out there, and they have no clue what they're doing, and that's okay.
Yep.
But I definitely think that this is never going to go away. But in terms of offshoring, and I have to watch what I say here because I don't know if anybody else is listening, but we dabbled in it, you know, for certain roles. And, you know, personally, I don't think that – I think there's such a – there's always a time and a place, and there's always a fit for a specific role. But when you try and compare what we're doing with some of our offshore versus some of the talent that we have in the office, there's a significant drop-off. And the communication I personally think it hurts, but obviously the cost is so significant. And I feel like you have to give it a shot as a business owner.
Sure. Yeah, but what about all these components that are made over all over the world, and then they bring them in and they make cars and trucks out of them, and they assemble them in North America, rather than have those components made in North America, even like Mexico, Canada, the U.S., where you've got a little bit more control. You don't have an ocean away.
Yeah, I mean,
I asked the question yesterday to this customer that said they're spending $25,000 for a container. I said, at the end of the day, if you break down the cost of goods sold, you're telling me that it's still cheaper to import rather than bring it into the States? And he said, yeah, which to me is a scary that's you know, to the so I missed the caller's name, but that's scary. That's the scariest thing about it. The cost just went up $20,000. I mean, almost 500%. You're saying that we still can't do better in the United States? And again, it goes back to a labor shortage. There's manufacturers that literally cannot get people in the factory. I mean, when I was at the bakery a couple of days ago, I asked about theirs, and they said it's a struggle, but they've had to give increases and pay, you know, sometimes time and a half for working days during COVID just because they didn't have a choice. Well, again, that increases costs, and those costs are going to be absorbed by the consumer. There's not the companies, good, strong companies are never going to continue to operate under a specific margin of what they can afford. And there's an operating cost to running a large manufacturer. So, you know, I think eventually we'll get back to having warehouses stuffed and grocery stores filled. But at what cost is that going to be, first of all? And second of all, when will that be? Because I don't predict it's going to be for another year and a half at the earliest. I mean, I don't know, Scott, if you disagree, but I just don't see how we're going to catch up when more and more and more ships are leaving China, coming to the States, which is only going to be putting a further backlog. I mean, we're literally a backlog weeks to get container ships off.
Yep.
And, you know, if you're shipping food or beverage, or you're shipping, you know, commodities that have a shelf life, I don't know how else you're shipping it but than air to guarantee that the product's going to be able to come over here. I mean, I like to dabble.
You really
tequila.
Can't afford to.
And if you think about tequila, and tequila, for example, there's an agave shortage. So all of a sudden,
right.
You go to the liquor store and tequila, if you look at the price of tequila, tequila's up 25%. Because of an agave shortage and a transportation shortage.
Well, let me ask this question off of what the statement you just made. Now, do you think we kind of shot ourselves in the foot by outsourcing to other countries and bringing them in and selling them in the United States? I guess what I'm asking is that if we had all our source to produce here in the United States in the past, do you think we will be in this predicament right now as we speak?
I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna have Chuck answer because Chuck's only a couple years older than me. But I've been in the business since 2003. Chuck's celebrating his 47th year in trucking today. So,
yeah.
7 years before I was born, he was already behind an 18-wheeler. But I'm not a global economist. But I can tell you from what I've read and from my see, our production overseas started in the early 70s or maybe even earlier than that. And once we figured out that we can make the same product for 1/100th of the cost, it's hard to tell anyone, hey, go outsource. I don't think people understood the long-term effect. I think they were thinking very short-term. And now we got ourselves in this predicament that's going to be tough to get out of. Chuck, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's a quagmire. And I'm old enough to remember this happening in probably the mid-80s, where Walmart always used to boast, proudly made in America. And somebody exposed them for flannel shirts that were packaged in America but made in China. And there was a whole commotion over it. And they interviewed somebody and they said, tell me, and this was just your average guy that lives somewhere in wherever, Carolinas or Missouri, whatever, doesn't matter. And they said, tell me something, would you rather pay a dollar more for the shirt or would you rather your neighbor or have your neighbor lose his job, you know? And he said, I'd rather have that dollar off and I don't really care about my neighbor. And it was that mentality that created this whole thing. Now, there's more to it, and I'm not a global economist either, but the other side to it is we had to allow for global trade. Otherwise, who would we be trading with? Because global trade works both ways. So we have exports from Canada and the USA, and we have imports. And right now, they're currently not balanced with, you know, a lot of our trading partners. And that's got to be straightened out. And, you know, the only way to straighten it out is either you sell them more, put tariffs on, which we don't want to do. The former administration tried that, and that was a nightmare. But, yeah, looking back, have we to do it all over again? I don't think it's nice to say it would be better if we never did it. The problem is that, you know, the times we were living in dictated that we needed to start having a global economy, because a global economy means global peace. Because if you don't have a global economy, then you could have the threat of war. So I think that's what it really is, and I think we just have to make things fair. And I think that working conditions in a lot of these countries overseas have to be equal to what we have in North America. You know, people still need to be able to earn a living. Otherwise, we're really dealing in slave labor, which I don't think we want to go down that path again.
All right. I do appreciate it. Just wanted to hear you guys' opinions on those subjects.
You know what, Steve? I always appreciate you calling in. You've always popped the best questions. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it again, Steve.
You be safe out there.
Yeah, I'm, and this is these are interesting times indeed. I guess with everything that has gone on over the past year and a half or so, I just truly believe that we're definitely in uncharted territories, and we don't know what the new normal really is as of now, and it's just going to be interesting to see how this correction takes place. Because I mean, everything across the board, when we wanted to, you know, like I said earlier, you know, we talked about one of they got political ads going on down here. Of course, they're talking about how much, you know, the price of you know, I think Scott mentioned tequila or the price of tequila. But, I mean, they're talking about things such as the price of beef is up 16%, the price of chicken, you know, the different commodities, how much those prices have went up. And like I started off with the program tonight, we're starting to see diesel fuel prices starting to the creeping incrementalism of the right. The diesel fuel price, which is going to increase, you know, have an effect definitely on our industry as far as the cost is concerned, moving, which we're already, you know, where's the tipping point, you know? So it's definitely interesting. I think sage advice would be for everyone that's listening in, especially our smaller people, is to make sure that we are paying down debt, if you have any. Paying it down as much as possible and stashing away as much as you possibly can. Not to say that the sky is falling tomorrow, but, you know, I definitely feel like when the correction does come, it's going to come hard and swift. And I would hate for anyone to get caught flat-footed or with their feet in cement, so to speak.
100%. You know, Noah built the ark before it started to rain. And I think that's sage advice, Rico, that our listeners should really be debt adverse. It's very tempting to take on debt and to expand your business. And if you can expand, great. The problem is to expand on overpriced equipment that is very hard to get. You have to be careful. Scott and Jeremy, are you seeing a lot of new carriers that you've never seen before?
Yeah, I mean, I think how many new MC numbers are there? You know, whether it's insurance lapses or carriers that are just starting their own, or, you know, families of carriers that have, you know, a brother that does this and another brother that, I mean, you see it a lot in Chicago. I think that people are buying MC numbers also and flipping them.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that.
You want to have an old MC because it shows that you've been paying your dues and there's not any insurance lapses or stuff like that. And I think that credibility speaks a lot, especially when you have a 3PL or 4PL that's trying to vet the carrier, right?
Right.
But from a new carriers, you know, a lot of these carriers that are jumping in the game and jumping out are people that are in there for the short-term buck. They're not passionate about what they're doing. They're just trying to make a quick buck because they know that this is an opportunity right now.
It's a great opportunity. But it's, you know, it takes years to build an empire.
But they're
right
sitting on
market.
They're sitting on that and all those, you know, all those posting sites, and all they're saying, they're not even saying call me. They're putting an email address out there saying they have Gmail or whatever. It's not even a company, and they'll say, okay, market average is $6 a mile. Give me 10. That's it.
Yeah, you know, it certainly leaves the door open for all sorts of fraudulent activity.
Yeah.
And that's why everybody, both the brokers and the carriers, have to be careful because, you know, I've spoken to so many carriers lately, double brokering scams, where they get a load from another carrier and it's not that carrier's load and it's gone through three hands. And I think Scott or Jeremy, one of you said earlier in the show, know who you're dealing with. And if it sounds too good to be true, it usually is.
Jerry, what do you think?
Well, that's the scary part now. That's the scary part now, Chuck. I mean, something, you know, even a credible source such as DAT is talking about, you know, the rates between Las Vegas and Los Angeles is over $6 a mile. Like, that would – before, that seemed like it was too good to be true, but I think it's just sound advice to make sure that you are doing the people that you've always done business with to try to maintain those relationships, which we've always talked about on this show. And when you, it's very difficult right now. It's difficult for me. I don't even want to entertain. If I haven't done business with a broker at this point, I really don't think I would really entertain. Regardless of the amount that I was being offered, I don't think that I would entertain doing any business with a new broker at this point in my business, the way it's set up right now and the things that I do. But I've set my operation up good to a point to where I'm kind of insulated enough to where if I just have to bounce back empty, then that's not an issue as well. But I think that it's just good advice to try to make sure that you take care of the relationship that you've already built and nurture those relationships, become a valuable resource to those people, and you'll always have more than enough to kind of keep you going, and that's kind of the safest. If I could think of something that was the safest, that probably would be my recommendation as the safest way to continue to do business with people that you already know and build and foster those relationships to where it's a point to where you're doing stuff with them on a consistent basis, and you know you kind of just about know you don't have to look for any funny stuff. You don't have to look for any crazy stuff. Of course, you always Not to say that you should ever take short steps. You know, whatever if something doesn't feel right or look right, you know, that should be a discussion. But I think those discussions are a lot easier to be had if you got a rapport and a relationship built up with someone.
I agree. Rico, can you check our technology? Was Jeremy muted by accident?
Double check. Let me get back over here.
Rico had enough of them.
Never.
No, you know Jeremy's still on.
Okay.
Maybe he muted his own phone. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I've done that before. How come nobody can hear me? Yeah,
I've been talking to myself for 20 minutes.
No, it wasn't on his end, Jeremy. It was on your end. It was operator error on your end.
What do you want to say, Jeremy?
I don't know. I'm seven thoughts ahead already. I forgot about what I was going to say there.
Okay. You know, the same goes on the other end, too, though. I think that most good brokerage houses and third-party logistics companies would much rather deal with carriers that they know and pay a few dollars more than go to the cheapest guy that they don't know in order to make a few dollars. It's just a lot of times. Most times, it's just not worth it. You know, you want to know.
Yeah, I think, like I say, to begin to try to wean yourself off of the transactional situations. I understand that some people, back when we very first started this podcast, way back in the days when we used to have, the fellow's name is escaping me right now. Good fellow, but he always talked about trying to get the highest rate and always willing to deal with however many brokers that you wanted, just bend the broker over at every twist and turn that you could. Wait till do the 3 o'clock shuffle. Wait till the freight absolutely has to move before you post the truck and all that type of stuff. And I guess, you know, back during some those days, you know, it might have been a time and place for it, but I think that it just goes once you start establishing yourself, you build those relationships and get that rapport built. It just goes a long way, and it keeps you from having to. A lot of times, it'll even keep you from having to compete with a lot of that stuff because you know some of the most valuable customers. They're not even going to entrust that freight to anybody else other than someone that they have that kind of rapport and relationship built with. That stuff is not even going to see a load board, as we always talk about.
That's right. And you know what? Back at, you know, the period that you were talking about, it was different because carriers had to beg for every penny that they put through their books. Today, it's a little bit different because money is not as tight. People have learned that they've got to pay more for carrier services. That's the big distinction, I think. So there's no reason to try to take advantage of anybody on either side. You have to work together congruently.
Well, I just looked at the time. We're at that threshold. So I want to give Jeremy and Scott both an opportunity to tell the folks how they might be able to help them out and get in contact with them. And then, Chuck, we'll let you bring this bang on in. So whichever one, Scott, Jeremy, whichever one you want to take it away first.
I'll kick it off. Listen, we're at Traffics. We're looking for carriers that want to partner with us for the long term. And I think that what you'll see and what you'll find, and hopefully by listening to us, is we're as honest as it gets. And I think that if you want consistent runs, if you want to be with a carrier that's going to, or 3PL that's going to treat you well, we're the team to do it. But we want consistency. We want to keep everybody on the road, and we want you all to make as much money as possible. If you have any questions or you want to reach out, my phone number is 216-338-5696.
And
thank you,
you know, it's been a pleasure speaking to you again. Congratulations to Chuck. I'm always, you know, if any drivers are ever up in the Naperville area, I'm always willing to meet for coffee, grab a drink on me. Call me anytime at 847-530-6158.
All right. Gentlemen, we appreciate you guys for taking the time out to come on and join us. Chuck, go ahead.
Yes. Thank you both, Scott and Jeremy. This is a lot of fun tonight. We missed having you guys on. Hopefully you'll come on again. If anybody wants to get hold of me and they want to get set up with Traffics up in Canada or have any questions, give me a call. My extension is 203. Phone number is 800-388-4352. Or just send me a quick email, chuck@traffics.com. Put your phone number in the email because sometimes it's just easier for me to call you back. You can always send me a private message on Instagram at Chuck Snow, CEO. Rico, I'm going to let you back us in the hole.
Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you guys, the most important part of the show, you guys, the listeners, for taking time out to listen to us, whether you download it or you listen live. We are greatly appreciative. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you took a little bit of time to hang out with us, and we're always eternally grateful for you doing so. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I want you guys to stay safe, stay healthy, keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise, and God willing, we'll talk at the same time, same place next week. God bless you and good night.
Chat you on the flip-flop. God bless.